Okay, apologies for the minor delay. Earlier today, my office released the official document tackling methamphetamine and action plan. Physical copies of this document have been made available to you. It follows my speech last week on tackling P, announcing our policy decisions in a number of areas as we fight the scourge on society. P is a seriously addictive, vicious drug. It has taken hold in New Zealand, it is wrecking lives, it is wrecking families, and it is fueling crime. My government is absolutely determined to reduce this problem, and that's what the plan sets out to do, by pulling together the recommendations of a cross-government work program. That program is the result of 4 months' work by a cross-government task force led by the Department of Prime Minister and Cabinet. The resulting action plan sets out the steps the government will take to tackle P and the timing of those steps. It will also act as an accountability document for the department's chief executives who are charged with responsibility for delivering on it. They will have to report to me every 6 months on the actions in the plan, the impact they are having and the progress they are making. The format of these reports is outlined in the accompanying document on baseline indicators, and I invite you to read it. The two documents demonstrate just how serious my government is about tackling the P issue. On Wednesday, ACC Minister Nick Smith will announce changes to ACC legislation to get the organisation on a sustainable path. ACC Chairman John Judge will also announce levies for public consultation. It is the government's intention to push out full funding of ACC from 2014 to 2019. Otherwise, levy increases on households, businesses and motorists would be too harsh. The government is working hard to secure the future of ACC and is looking for a careful balance between the interests of claimants and those of levy payers. When the House resumes tomorrow, it is the government's intention to make progress on and pass the anti-money laundering and countering financing of terrorism bill, the land transport enforcement powers amendment bill, the vehicle confiscation and seizure bill, and other bills on the order paper. I would like to run through some of the government's activity this week. Very briefly, the Defence Minister Wayne Mack this morning farewelled the next rotation of troops leaving for Afghanistan for the Provincial Reconstruction Team in Bamiyan Province. The terms of reference for the independent review of the civil defence response to the Samoan tsunami will be released tomorrow by the Minister John Carter. On Wednesday, we have an ACC announcement and a bill to be tabled, and the Crown accounts for the financial year ended June 30th, 2009 will be released. Finance Minister Bill English will be at the lock-up. On Thursday, the terms of reference for the review of adventure tourism safety is expected to be released. And as I said at the 21st of September press conference, there have been a number of concerns relating to events in the adventure tourism sector. And I have instructed the Minister of Labour to lead a cross-departmental investigation of the sector and report back on the current situation and ways to improve risk management and safety. As for my week, after this press conference, I'm addressing the opening of the RSA annual conference. I have various events tomorrow, including breakfast with Lord Ashcroft, if you want to pop along, and a Diwali function at Parliament. On Wednesday, I'm opening the Police Association annual conference, and on Thursday, I'm in Timaru and at a Burnham military camp to see the LSD program. And on Friday, I have various events in Auckland. And just one final point on the tsunami. Yesterday, we announced $5 million Australian dollars, so effectively $6.1 million New Zealand dollars, more in aid to tsunami, along with a matching contribution of $5 million Australian dollars by the Australian government. The coordination of our aid program between Australia and New Zealand reflects the declaration we made at Cairns that Australia and New Zealand will be working more closely together as we coordinate our aid in the Pacific. On Saturday, as many of you will be aware, the multi-role Navy ship HMNZS Canterbury is expected to arrive in Samoa. With dispatch on Saturday, expected to arrive in Samoa on Thursday, carrying various supplies. That's it for me.
In terms of ACC, you talked this morning about looking at 20 areas,
yeah,
potential
Well, there's going to be a wide range, and ultimately they'll go out for consultation. Things like co-payment for physios is one example of that. There may well be others. I'll leave it for the minister on Wednesday to talk to you about some of those other issues. But the aim here is to have a mature and transparent conversation with the New Zealand public about trade-offs here between a scheme which has been extended on an unfunded basis and where there has been failure in the government's view to achieve the rehabilitation rates that we want and therefore is very expensive to run, vis-a-vis levy increases. And it's my view that levy increases in the order that were proposed in the weekend of 40 to 50% are unacceptable. That is not an option on the table, but clearly there will be levy increases. Ultimately, that's a political decision made by the Cabinet in the early part of 2010.
The Minister highlighted the issue of suicide and payments to family members this morning in an interview.
Yep.
Would you say that was one of the 20 areas?
Look, it may be, but I think rather than dissect them individually, it's better for you to take those up directly with the Minister's office.
It appears that the Chairman of ACC was talking up the need for the increase in levy to be more than 10%, and some speculation was 40%. Are you concerned that he's talked it up to such an extent that people are actually very concerned about what they're going to have to fork out?
No, I mean, I think the Chairman and the Board ultimately have a set of responsibilities and objectives, and those responsibilities are to make sure that the scheme is sustainable in the long term. I understand that, but there are a series of political choices that ultimately need to be made. That is the assumption of a 40 to 50% increase without changes to the scheme. Now, some of them have already announced fully funding being extended out to 2019. There will be others, and there is clearly a trade-off here between a scheme which is, I believe, will be very comprehensive, but nevertheless affordable.
How much does pushing out fully funding limits those projected levy rises?
Yeah, again, I'd probably better take up the exact details on Wednesday, but it does have some impact on three of the four categories, but not all of them. So in some it makes an impact, but not on all of them. Of the time.
Basically, people can be pretty confident though that their car registrations, their petrol taxes, the levies that they pay, that you take out of their pay, will all be going up.
Levies will rise, and that's an unfortunate fact of a number of issues, really. Partly, as I say, an extension of the scheme, partly because the revenue earned off the investment portfolio of the scheme has been reducing. Partly because rehabilitation has proved to be more expensive and less effective, so the tail is larger. And I think, in general, they go up every year anyway. It's a question of by how much. I just look at increases of 30, 40, 50% and say that's just unacceptable to New Zealanders. It would cut into their household incomes. It would have quite a substantial impact on business profitability. And there's a better balance to be struck than increasing by that amount.
So you're indicating it's potentially up to 30%, really? That's politically,
stomach it. I wouldn't want to put a number on there. Let's just wait and see.
Those areas which we're entitled to are on the
and somehow...
Sorry, Tom?
Labor says you're setting up a straw man here, and that essentially you're trying to make things sound much worse than they actually are.
Yeah, the problem with that argument from the Labor Party is that the proposed increases by the ACC board reflect not only their work and the actuarial auditing of their work, but also PwC's own analysis of the situation. There's actually been three relatively independent assessments of the liabilities and what increases are required. So this isn't something we're making up on the hoof, nor is it some sort of straw man to lead to privatisation of ACC. That's not the intention. This is just a reality that we are actually legally required to get the scheme back onto a firmer footing.
Those areas that are wound back, will people that are already claiming in those areas be able to continue getting their entitlements, or will they stop altogether?
I can't answer that question at the moment until those decisions have been made.
When you said the proposed increases by ACC, what increases were they proposing? What was the top end?
Well, you've seen indications from the Chairman at the weekend that there could be as high as 40 to 50%.
Wow.
Well, I've seen indications from people that it could be as high as that.
The legislation that's going to be introduced on Wednesday, as well as pushing out the deadline for funding, is going to also include changes to entitlements?
It may do. It's quite a complex way that entitlements are changed. They're changed both by legislation, ultimately by regulation, and actually by order in council. And again, it's probably better if you take that up with the minister on Wednesday.
But on Wednesday, will we see some changes?
You see the proposed legislative changes and potentially an indication of other areas where the minister's looking.
Are victims of sexual abuse right in fearing that they'll be losing their entitlement?
Rather than jump to conclusions, I think you should wait till Wednesday.
On the matter of methamphetamine, you referred to earlier a rising crime rate, but looking at the numbers that were released, conviction rates have been static from 2006 to 2008, and recorded offences have dropped by about 1,000. So where is this increased crime? Why isn't it reflected in the numbers released?
Yeah, I think there's a few things here. Firstly, it's not a perfect science in the way that we record the impacts of methamphetamine and meth users. If you have a look at the number of those people that have been sentenced or convicted, actually those numbers have doubled over the last few years. What we do know is that there's a hardcore group of users, and that hardcore group is not going away quickly, and they are causing a substantial amount of devastation, I think, in the community, whether it's the increase in violent crime or the $1 to $1.5 billion impact on society that we estimate. We also know, on the best information that we have a problem that puts us in the top three in the developed world. So, look, part of the way that data is collected is off things like telephone surveys, and it's not absolutely perfect. I think you can tell from the anecdotal evidence, the number of people that the courts are wanting to send off for treatment, the number of confirmed P users in our prisons, the increase in violent crime, all of those things add to a mixture which shows us we have a substantial P problem and it should be tackled. And secondly, you know, this speaks to the heart of organised crime in New Zealand and the impact of organised crime internationally, and the government is getting serious about dealing with those people.
Families are already going to be facing lots of different price increases. How can you justify now putting another big increase on them for just accessing the basic cough and prescription cost GP?
Yeah, I don't think it's well understood, actually, in terms of those who buy over-the-counter cold and flu remedies. If you look at the advisory group, the drug advisory panel that advises the government, they think that 80% of cold and flu remedies that are bought over-the-counter do not include cetirizine. Now, the chief science advisor, Sir Peter Gluckman, thinks it's in the 60-70%. So whatever your number, about 3/4 of all cold and flu remedies do not include cetirizine. So there's no change there. There are some that do, but what we do know is 1/3 of all clan labs, where the police go and bust those clan labs, show evidence that there is domestically sourced cetirizine. So you have to look at that situation and say, could there be a cost to New Zealand consumers? Well, there may be some, or some inconvenience, there may be. Although I strongly suggest those people may well be going to the doctor anyway, because they're obviously unwell. But you also got to set that against the fact that a huge amount of robbery that takes place in this country is a result of people that are trying to feed a pee habit. The increase in violent crime, the murders that occur in our society. So these things are always a balancing act, but my sense is that New Zealanders want leadership on this issue, and they want us to take it seriously. And that's what we're doing.
So is it your advice that people won't be inconvenienced? Is it your advice that people won't have to pay more, people won't have to go to the GP? So in that case, you know, what's the difference?
Well, there's no scientific evidence at all to support that if people use the alternatives to pseudoephedrine, that there'll be any impact on health outcomes. If you look at the Netherlands as an example, they don't have pseudoephedrine, and there's no evidence to support that the Netherlands have worse outcomes than New Zealand.
Will suppliers simply get it from elsewhere?
Yeah, okay, so the issue is they'll obviously try to source that from overseas, and that's why we are beefing up our customs capability with 40 extra customs officers, or 40 dedicated customs officers. with new techniques for intelligence and for assessing mail imports and importation through our seaports. And in the trial that we ran in August, we took $13 million worth of meth out of supply, and they had an immediate impact on the price on the street. Now, in my view, the combination of all the things we're doing on the demand and supply side will have an impact on pea usage in New Zealand.
Are you or any minister is going to meet the yoga leader, Mr. Rupiak here?
No.
Why not?
Because she's not a head of state, she doesn't represent a government, and I don't meet random people that come into New Zealand.
And the last time you visited in Australia, I believe you heard that China had quite a big noise to Australia, but this time it's very quiet to New Zealand. Why?
Can't answer that. You'd have to ask the Chinese.
Prime Minister, just coming back to methamphetamine, and on the weekend I saw you comment that you expect to see the street price of the drop in a year.
I expect to see it rise, actually.
Yes. Sorry, yeah, forgive me. How quickly are you intending on getting the pseudoephedrine prescription only in?
Yeah, that's a good question. We'll need to work our way through that. I think it's by the latter part of the year from memory, but I'll have to check exactly when we intend to implement it.
We saw the benefit numbers come down a little bit, just how confident are you that that's part of the trend and part of the economy turning around?
Well, it's certainly been a trend, so we've seen the numbers of people going on the unemployment benefit reducing reasonably substantially over the last 5 to 6 weeks. For a number of weeks, it's been hovering around about 200 people a week going on to the benefit. This is the first week we were seeing positive news, and my understanding is the indications are next week it would be positive as well. So I think that's the good news part of the story, is it's likely that unemployment will top out at a lower rate than some of the more dire predictions at the start of the year. But we need to recognise there's a seasonality to this. You've got student numbers, quite big student numbers, obviously coming out of their studies, and that will have an impact, and there are other factors. So typically we always see a rise in unemployment numbers at the latter part of the year and the early part of the new year. And I'm not for one moment suggesting that there was the government that we're seeing the worst of those going on the unemployment benefit are over in terms of numbers. The predictions still are that that will top out in the middle of 2010.
So are you seeing that official forecasts would show that peaking at less than 7.5%?
Well, the Reserve Bank, when it left interest rates on hold some weeks ago, actually downgraded its forecast for the peak of unemployment to 6.8%. Treasury haven't adjusted its numbers on an official capacity that I've seen from the 7.5% number.
You were seeing comments broadly from Hillary Clinton saying the US is resuming intelligence sharing cooperation with New Zealand. Can you expand on that?
I can't actually. I can say that in a number of areas the relationship is progressing, and I think you can see from the comments made by the Assistant Secretary Kirk Campbell in the Q&A interview in the weekend that real and demonstrated progress is being made in the relationship, but I just don't comment on issues of matters of security.
Some of it have resumed already. She makes it sound as though, because she says it's, we think it's very significant. So she's making it sound as though this is something brand new.
Yeah. Well, I just can't go into any greater details. I'm sorry.
Have you received any more information on the bids for the World Cup?
To broadcasting? No, I haven't. Although I had been told that there's some expectation that we may find out from the IRB as early as this week, but I haven't heard any more detail from there.
Do you think your target of Māori TV getting 100% coverage is a little unrealistic?
No, and the advice I've had from, indirectly I might add, but the offer was made for me to have it directly from the chairman of MTS was that they are more than happy with the subcontracting situation, and that would achieve 100% broadcasting.
And do you think that they should subcontract all 16 of the live games? Is that your expectation, or would you be happy if they subcontract out a smaller amount of those 16 games?
Well, I think ultimately that's something they would need to work through with other parties if that's where it finally rested. I mean, in in the perfect world, I would prefer those 16 games all to be available to New Zealanders on a free-to-air basis. And ultimately, that, the purpose of the government putting up some money for a bit, whether it's through Television New Zealand or the Māori Television Service, is to ensure that New Zealanders get access to what will be a tremendous sporting event hosted here in New Zealand. I think they've got some entitlement to see those games.
How much power do you have after the IAB has made its decision to actually then alter the mix of events or the television mix
I don't honestly don't know the answer to that, but certainly MTS have altered their bid to indicate that they would, or to ensure that they have the capability for subcontracting if required.
Why would they do that? What do they gain by subcontracting to, say, for instance, TVNZ?
Fulfilling my expectations.
Were you suggesting in that last answer that you might actually give TVNZ a bit more money for a bid?
No, I wasn't suggesting that. I'm just saying if Television New Zealand has a bid in, and my understanding is that they do, and Māori Television, either of those will require government money. And so my expectations are that 100% of New Zealanders can view it.
Was there any thought given before this all started to get those at least a couple of the other stations together
and say, hey? Yeah, I think that was the preference of ministers when they had some discussion after they'd become aware of it.
Are you entirely happy with
the
TPK funding going towards that purpose?
Well, look, I've seen a business case now that I've raised that issue. It was given to me by the Minister of Māori Affairs on Friday when we were together in the Hawke's Bay. And it spells out a case, saying I agree with all of the assumptions, but it's quite a comprehensive case. Well, there's quite a number of assumptions in there, and some of those may be correct, some of them may not be. I haven't tested them.
Such as, what areas would you have concern about as contained in that business plan?
Well, really what the long-term implications would be. Now, I think there'll be a short-term gravitation of people to that platform, but whether it has long-term stickiness is another issue.
So that's in terms of the justification, in terms of Māori development and the payoff for that?
And they put up a case. I mean, one of the cases they put up is they spend very similar numbers to what's being proposed actually on Māori Language Week. So, you know, there's an argument that they use that for promotion of Māori language. Yeah, I can see some arguments there.
Could the main platforms be through Māori language and showcasing the Māori business? Is that what
it was? There's that. A number of other things, generally promoting culture and other programs that they wrap around the broadcast. There's a number of things. And some of those would have strong validity. I think if you can pull people onto the platform, then there's other things you can promote. It's, the case is not without its merits, but I'm just saying it's quite comprehensive in some of the assumptions I haven't tested.
Do you think it's a good look for MPs to be using taxpayer allowances for electorate offices that they own personally, that they own themselves?
Providing they fit with the rules, I have no concerns about it.
You don't think that's an area that might need to be reformed, given that there's, you know, quite substantial capital gains in some of those offices?
Given from what I can see, that largely involves the subsidies of the taxpayer, then I think no.
How much do you charge in rent for your office?
I'm not going to go into the details of mine, but it would be fair to, I think, characterise it, because otherwise once I do, every other MP should, and I think that sets the wrong precedent. I've seen some reports in the Dominion Post that it's peppercorn. I wouldn't describe it as that. I would describe it as a more fair rental than that. But I can tell you the rental was set in 2002. 2003, there was an independent valuation done at the time. It was below the independent valuation, and it's never been increased.
Do you think this whole area needs to be opened up to more public scrutiny, though, so that the public can actually see where their money's going and who it's going to? Because there doesn't seem to be much justification for secrecy around the MPs when there's so much openness for ministers.
Well, I don't think so, in the sense that the system has control checks within it, and they are, you need an independent valuation. You need to, as far as I can see, declare it, which I do in my pecuniary interest. And from what I can see, there's a substantial subsidy that's been going on from myself to the taxpayer. So, personally, I'm satisfied with my own position. I can't comment about everybody else's, because it's a matter for the Speaker, and I haven't looked at it.
Have you or your government received any letter or email telling calls from China or the Chinese embassy here about the lady, about the Uyghur lady's visit? Have you received any letter or email or telephone calls from China?
I personally haven't, no. I think the matter was discussed between the Ministry of Foreign Affairs and the Chinese Embassy. They make submissions or representations on all sorts of issues, but I personally haven't had any correspondence on the matter.
Can you talk to Hu Jintao in the US about this issue and the dilemmas with it in the US?
No.
On the police methamphetamine control strategy, sorry, I'll sort of come back to this for the third time. Why did they need to set the strategy? I mean, is it just common sense that they should be targeting key cooks and gangs?
Well, it was a recognition that I set a clear expectation of those core ministries to come up with a new way of looking at and tackling the issue of methamphetamine use in New Zealand. And so, yes, you're right, they've got a drugs unit, and yes, they've had a drug strategy. I personally don't think it's been entirely effective, and that's one of the reasons why we've had such a big problem with P. So I was pleased that the police commissioner took the initiative and came up with his own proposal, and that proposal will be implemented.
What do you think the Chinese have been?
I've only really seen his new proposal, and I haven't really cross-referenced it to the old one completely, so it might be unfair of me to comment. I think if you're going to deal with these issues, you need a comprehensive solution, and we've done that. You know, we're tackling over-the-counter sales of methamphetamine, or pseudoephedrine. We're dealing with the importation, both from the customs perspective and the police. We're making sure there's more detox beds. We're making sure there's more rehabilitation. We're dealing with the legal issues around organised crime. And this is a very comprehensive package. And I think if I'd got up here and said, we're banning over-the-counter pseudoephedrine, you would be entitled to be a little bit suspect that we were going to make progress. But I actually think we're the first government that's ever stood up and seriously put up a proposal to tackle this issue. Now, let's see how successful we are. But I think if we are successful, and I believe we will be, I think the New Zealand public will back us and support us on it.
Is a comprehensive strategy then linked into other drugs and including alcohol?
Yeah, and I think you make a very valid point there. There are real issues around alcohol use. The government, as you're aware, is looking at quite a comprehensive response also to alcohol-related issues. And that's been as a result of the work by the Law Commission and both the Minister of Justice. We're in the process of considering those issues, and at some point we'll come back after public consultation with some recommendations. Ultimately, one of the issues that we are tackling as a result of the work on P when it comes to alcohol is in civil commitment, where someone can be committed under the 1966 Alcoholism and Drug Act.
Why do you think P has become such a galloping problem in New Zealand? In other countries that have a lot of drugs, it's not known.
Yeah, I think there's been a couple of reasons. Firstly, it's been more affordable. So if you look at those high-end, very addictive drugs, heroin and cocaine, you can't manufacture them easily in the country, in New Zealand, whereas in the case of P, you can. Secondly, the process of manufacture, as I understand it, is quite a simple chemical process. I'm largely getting pseudoephedrine, removing oxygen from it, so it's relatively simple. And thirdly, for that reason, it's been more affordable, and therefore more people have experimented with it. Thank you much.